Wayne Incorporated, hostile takeover. Superman's grounded, waiting for the order. Rex, man, two from the mic, I'm Casanova. Cause now that Chris and Matt are back to bring the pain, this the podcast you play when you're waiting for the train. When you're walking to the store, when you're killing time at work, it's a show that'll destroy the whole universe. So awesome, watch as I spit Jay Ferocious, two hosts with the most, and I'm Adam Warrock. Whether Marvel or DC, hip-hop or rap, it's like KRS-One's Return of the Boom Bap. Never out of style, and we're coming on strong, even though every episode's a bit too long. If Flash Gordon dies before I wake, then the cops will probably say it was W-R-A.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to War Rocket Ajax, where if you crave action, we're your satisfaction, guaranteed to put you in traction. My name is Chris Sims, and with me, as always, is my co-host, Mr. Matt Wilson. Matt, how are you today, sir?
I am doing quite all right, Chris Sims of ComicsAlliance.com and the-ISB.com. How are things with you?
Things are going pretty well. We are recording this on a Friday night, so I am getting ready for Free Comic Book Day tomorrow. I'm sure we'll be able to talk about that next in our next week's show, if I can actually say words. But I'm looking forward to it. Chad and I are going to be signing copies of Awesome Hospital, Resurrection, Skull Kickers, and it should be a lot of fun. And obviously, you know, it is a day of free comic books, so the holidays do not get better than that without involving Santa Claus.
Indeed, and readers of Comics Alliance will know that you have already been able to read a lot of the new Free Comic Book Day comics. I am looking forward to going to my local shop and picking out a few and reading those, and luckily I've got your recommendations to go from, so I will definitely be picking up that Mickey Mouse book and maybe that Darkwing Duck book just to see what it's all about.
It's a weird one.
Crazy.
It is a weird one. But we will be talking about those and more later in the show when we talk about comics.
Yes.
We have an excellent show for everybody today. Ethan Nicole, the co-creator of Axe Cop with his 6-year-old brother, is going to be here. Malachi, the younger of the two, is not going to be here, but we will be talking to Ethan about Axe Cop and its incredible success that has made everyone else who does a webcomic, me included, kind of hate him. But at the same time, we love his comic, so it all works out. If you'd like to get more information on the show, you can check out warrocketajax.com. You can email us at warrocketpodcast@gmail.com. And you can find us on iTunes as well, where you can leave us a review if you'd like. And with that, Matt, what do you say we get right into it and check ourselves?
Yeah, let's do some checking. All right, Chris, what's been going on with you this week?
We don't usually talk about like real world news on the show. Obviously, we did and would continue to encourage our listeners to donate to help the relief efforts in Japan and in the American South, where there were a lot of tornadoes. And we'll have links on warrocketajax.com where you can go to help out with that. But this past week, there was a very, very huge piece of real-world news, which is that if you haven't heard this...
you're getting this news from War Rocket Ajax...
if you are waiting on War Rocket, like, if you're like, nope, don't want to read the paper, don't want to watch the news, I just want to get it all from War Rocket Ajax. Osama bin Laden was killed this last Sunday. And I mention this because this is the weirdest thing that has happened to me in quite a while. Because I was out at a bar in Colombia watching a WWE pay-per-view. It was Extreme Rules. Congratulations to Christian on his win of the World Heavyweight Championship. But they had a lumberjack match. And I did not know who some of the guys were. And, you know, I've watched wrestling for 20 years, so I figured I should know who these guys were, but I didn't recognize them. So I pulled out my phone, I went on Twitter, and I said, hey, does anybody know who these guys, you know, who are these lumberjacks? For those of you who don't watch wrestling, lumberjacks in this context means dude to hang out around the outside of the ring, and if any of the wrestlers get thrown over, they get to beat them up. They do not have flannel shirts, axes, or beards. Well, some of them don't. Anyway, a couple minutes went by, and I checked Twitter to see if anybody had answered me. No one had answered me because they were all talking about the president coming on TV to make a major announcement at 10:30 on a Sunday night. So I got a little worried. But, you know, obviously, I'm sitting there watching the main event of Extreme Rules, watching John Cena fight The Miz, and the news comes on my phone. And so, and I'm like the only guy in the bar who's not paying attention to the TV. So as soon as the show goes off, I tell everybody at my table, and then as soon as the show goes off, I'm like, hey, should I tell people? And they were like, yeah. So I kind of stood up and I was like, hey, everybody, they got Osama bin Laden. And I have never seen that many happy South Carolinians at once. But my favorite, this, I'm going to go ahead and say, this was an anti-terrorist crowd. But my favorite thing was that there was this dude with this, terrible beard, probably in his early 20s, really, kind of stocky, and he had a replica title belt over his shoulder. And he turned to his friend, who was wearing a John Cena shirt, a John Cena hat, a John Cena wristband, and a John Cena necklace. And he said, man, I can't believe it. Two pieces of good news in one day. And I was like, hold on. First of all, this dude is equating John Cena winning the world title to the death of Osama bin Laden. Second of all, this guy has never gotten two pieces of good news in one day before.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I thought that was I thought that was something. I thought that was worth sharing.
That is. You can't make that kind of stuff up.
Highlight of my week. Matt, what about you? Have you done anything fun or exciting?
Well, I do want to note that as I was, when I found out that President Obama was going to make this announcement, I was in the middle of watching an episode of Twin Peaks, and my mind went to all these weird, weird places as to, what he might be announcing while I was in the headspace of Twin Peaks. But anyway. They got Bob, exactly.
Leland Palmer has been apprehended by SEAL Team 6.
Nobody will dance with me. This is on a much, much smaller scale than Osama bin Laden being killed. But because I mentioned it last week, I felt like I needed to follow up on my trip to the donut place that I had to get up really early to go to and stand in line for half an hour to pay $16 for not a whole lot of donuts. Okay, they were very good. They are very good donuts.
How, you paid $16? How many did you get?
Half a dozen.
No way. Yeah. Did you pay more than $2 per donut? Were they made of gold?
The old-fashioned donuts were $2. The
Jesus.
Glazed donuts, which are huge. The glazed donuts are about the size of two donuts. Half a donut is a full donut almost. They were $3. So
Jesus. That's still twice as much as Krispy Kreme.
Exactly. This is I'm getting to my point. These donuts were very good. They were very clearly fresh. They had been made that morning. There's an interesting gimmick of this place makes a certain number of donuts every day. Once they sell out of those donuts, they are gone. So by 10 or 10:30, no more donuts at this donut place. But it is very small. The line, we got there right when they opened, which was at about 8:30. I was actually a little late for work because I was in the donut line for half an hour. And we got in, we got our donuts, and we ate one right then and there. And delicious, but in for my money, it still does not compare to the fresh hot Krispy Kreme off the conveyor belt, which costs like what, 89 cents?
Yeah, like I think they're like you know, like $3 for half a dozen.
Yeah, it may be a little more than that, but it's like $6.99 for a dozen. I mean, this is a thing. This is the thing about living in a city, like the third largest city in the country. There are a lot more places that can charge all kinds of money because of gimmickry and like just because of the fact that they're trendy. And I have encountered more and more of this, like, the more of these places I go to that I, like, read about and things. And always I come out of these things and I'm like, what is the big fucking deal? I have been much more satisfied with, like, the places that are, like, kind of reasonably priced and, like, sort of, like, hidden treasures in the city than stuff like that. But, you know, it was neat to go stand in line for donuts one morning and like go to this place where the donuts are rare, I guess.
And rarefied donuts.
So I wanted to give a quick update on that, and we shall never talk about this donut place again. But with that,
yeah, I think we're going to go ahead and come out as a pro Krispy Kreme podcast.
Yeah, definitely. Krispy Kreme, if you want to sponsor us along with Bojangles, we will take it. Let's move on to making some wrecks.
Let's do it. Matt, I take it that you are not recommending local donuts this week.
They were very good. I can't stress that enough, that they were good. And my girlfriend pretty much fell in love with their old-fashioned donuts. But no, they are not my recommendation. What I'm recommending this week is actually a game that you can get for iPhone. I think it's probably available for other smartphones as well. And it's one of those things where it's an iPhone app that you can get for your iPad and kind of blow it up to iPad size. And it actually looks pretty good to have been like doubled in size for the iPad. It's an older game, but one I've been playing a ton recently, and that is Peggle. Do you know Peggle, Chris?
I have heard of it. I have never played it. I know that it's kind of like the poster child for casual games.
Yeah, it's very like you could sit down and play it for 10 minutes and then turn it off and whatever. Sort of like, I mean, obviously, like, Angry Birds has really taken over this subgenre in the past year or so. Mm-hmm. But for me, I much prefer this game to Angry Birds.
Because you're an iconoclast.
I am. And I don't know, like, playing Angry Birds, like, puts me in a weird place, sort of emotionally. Because I think about this, like, this war between these pigs and these birds and how it's never ending. And I actually wrote a piece for my blog a while ago, like from the perspective of one of those pigs, sort of like, you know, Grendel is about the bad guy in Beowulf. I wanted to write a Grendel for the green pigs and Angry Birds. I don't know why, but my head always goes there about how like this war never ends for the Angry Birds. But Peggle,
is there a grim Garth Ennis version of Angry Birds?
If there was a Garth Ennis Angry Birds comic, I would buy it so fast. But anyway, Peggle is just sort of a really fun, really easy to get, quick puzzle game where kind of think about like Plinko from The Price is Right, but the pegs are arranged in all these different orders. You have different characters who have like different skills and like special things they can do to hit the pegs, and the goal is to, there are blue pegs and there are orange pegs on the screen. You're supposed to hit all the orange pegs. Really basic, really easy, but there are these challenge sections in the game where you have to like hit a certain score, or there's more orange pegs on the screen than normal and you have to hit all the orange pegs, or you have to do two levels back to back and win them both. And I've really been getting into the challenge stuff lately, and like it is the perfect time waster, like on a commute or like when I'm just trying to unwind before I go to bed and I don't feel like reading something. Yeah, Peggle is what I would recommend for the iPhone that isn't Angry Birds because of my iconoclastic nature. Chris, what do you have to recommend this week?
Well, we are probably the only comic book podcast that will not be talking about the Thor movie this week. I have yet to see it.
As have I. Yeah. I will have seen it probably by the time the podcast goes up.
Oh, yeah, I definitely will. I am supposed to be reviewing it for Comics Alliance next week, so hopefully I will have seen it. Chad saw it, and he really loved it, and then he said he wasn't going to spoil it for me, and then we talked for about a half hour about stuff that was in the movie. I did actually get copies of the video games sent to me by Sega to review. I've played a little bit of the Xbox one, but they also sent the Wii one and the Nintendo DS one. And I'm actually really looking forward to the DS one more than anything, because as we have previously discussed last week, it's a side-scrolling action game.
Yeah.
Really excited about that. So my recommendation this week is going to be a musical recommendation. If you've been listening to the Evan Funk Davies Show on WFMU with a friend of the show, Evan Funk Davies, there's a song that he has recently become really attached to the point where he will occasionally play it twice in his three-hour time slot, and it's called 13 Women by a band called The Renegades, a British rock band from the 60s. And the more he plays it, the more I realize that it really is an incredible, incredible song. It's just this great little slice of rock music. And there's like an organ sting in it. And there's this part where like the drummer just, you know, at the beginning of the second verse, the drummer just like, you know, boom, 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 boom. It's, you know, I know I'm sounding like a crazy man trying to describe this, but it's a great song. You will hear it if you tune into Evan Funk Davies on Wednesday nights, 9 o'clock on WFMU, or you can head over to my Tumblr, which is 20%cooler.tumblr.com, where I have posted it. And speaking of 20% cooler, season finale of My Little Pony was this week. Again, have not watched it yet. Doesn't go up on sale on iTunes until tomorrow, but I'm going to go ahead and make a prediction that I will talk about that more than I will talk about Thor on next week's program. So stay tuned to see if I am correct.
I can guarantee that you are. It's a foregone conclusion, I think.
All right. Matt, what do you say we go ahead and we discuss some comic books?
Yeah, let's talk about comics. So, as we mentioned earlier on in the show, Chris, you've had an opportunity to read all the Free Comic Book Day comics this week. It is not yet Saturday when we were recording this, so I haven't seen them yet. Anything that stood out to you that you maybe didn't get to talk about in your Comics Alliance piece that you wanted to talk about on the show?
I actually haven't gotten a chance to read all of them. Diamond sent over a bunch of reviews for or review copies for Comics Alliance, and I read what they gave us, but they did not include, unfortunately, the Elric comic by Chris Robertson, which I'm really looking forward to, and a couple other things. There were some things that I didn't get to mention. Ape put out a Richie Rich story, a Kung Fu Panda Richie Rich flip book. And I just have to say, I hate Richie Rich so much. Like, just like it, this insane amount of hatred I have for that kid. Like he and like I don't like Red Tornado and Wonder Man as characters, right? Like, if they show up in my comics, I'm like, oh, these guys. But, you know, I don't, like, get mad about it. Lucy Lane and Richie Rich, I hate them as if they were people. Just, you know, like why is he acting like that? Why is she such a jerk? Which is weird, you know, and a lot of people think it's weird because I'm such a big fan of Scrooge McDuck. And I think, you know, I literally think Scrooge McDuck is in the probably top, you know, 3 to 5 comic book characters of all time. But there's a difference. Like, you know, Scrooge McDuck, if you'll read, if you go back and read Life and Times or any Karl Barks or Don Rosa story, Scrooge McDuck worked for that money. All right, he had a hard life, and he dug that gold out of the ground with his own two hands. Richie Rich, meanwhile, he's an old money heir who has no, like, and the thing is, he has no concept of the value of money. Like, he made a lemonade stand out of gold bars, and then still charged 5 cents for the cups of lemonade. I hate him. He has a safe made of gold and diamonds to put his money inside.
Yeah.
But, you know, I read the comic with him, and it's, you know, it's decent. I just, you know, cannot stand that character.
The fact that you can say a comic about a character you hate is decent, I don't know what that says about you, Chris, but...
Yeah, well, I mean, but it's really weird, you know, it's kind of a, you know, weird little goofy, you know, cartoony adventure story, but then I'll get to the part where, you know, Cadbury, his butler, like, you know, has to take off his gloves and go fight a bunch of thugs, because, you know, obviously, because in the story, they don't want children fighting thugs, so the only adult, Cadbury, has to do it, but I'm just sitting there reading it going, oh, that son of a bitch is sending his butler to go fight his battles, So, you know, I have that emotional reaction and the logical one.
Not only do you have this just, like, seething anger for a fictional character, a child. It's a child.
I hate him. I really do. A couple of the other ones that I really, really loved, the Fantagraphics Mickey Mouse reprint, and I'm going to be getting that book, the book that they're doing of Floyd Gottfredson Mickey Mouse strips, which I actually thought was going to be really expensive. Like, I thought it was going to be like a big, you know, DC archive style book, but it's actually a $30 book that's 300 pages, so it's not bad at all, and I'm really looking forward to reading it. But one of the things that I did not get to talk about in the article, I think I've mentioned on the show that I really, really loved Avatar: The Last Airbender. I watched the whole series on Netflix last year, and it's just, you know, incredible.
I did the same thing, and I love it too.
Yeah. I was not aware that there were comics that ran in Nickelodeon magazine until I saw a solicitation for Dark Horse doing a collection of them. And one of their free comic book day books is they have a sampler of Avatar and Clone Wars stuff. And, you know, I didn't even bother to read the Clone Wars stuff because, you know, I have a stance on Star Wars. But
leave it at that.
But the Avatar comics are actually really good and really fun. and you can very easily identify like where they're set in the course of the show, which is really neat. And the second one is by Jay Torres and Guri Hiro, who we've talked about before. And it's, you know, it obviously looks fantastic. And, you know, is a very, very fun story. It really makes me wish that I had pre-ordered the trade paperback, but I don't think I did, sadly. So, other than that, I'm still waiting to sort of grab my comics when I hit the store for Free Comic Book Day. So, that's about all I've got. Matt, what about you? You read anything?
I picked up pretty much just one book, and that was Fear Itself number 2. And pretty much all I have to say about it is this feels a lot more like a first issue than the first issue did, in that it has that sort of like, okay, this is sort of where we're going set of moments in the issue. Like the first issue was almost more like a prologue, and this one is the one that seems to really kind of like kick things off and get them going, because basically what happens is you have different characters in different places all over the world, hammers falling out of the sky near them, not unlike Thor's hammer, and there's it being sort of clear but not exactly stated that these hammers are specifically for these characters, and the characters pick up the hammer and it turns them into sort of like semi-Asgardian characters. Like it sort of gives them like a godlike aura about them, and they have like crazy light pieces on their bodies suddenly, and they have sort of like mythical names all of a sudden that they know as soon as they pick up the hammer. It's much more of like a kickoff. Here are the bad guys that we know that the superheroes are going to be fighting in the upcoming issues, kind of issue. And in that sense, it read a lot more like an event comic. But that said, it is done really well, and Stuart Immonen again knocks it out. And there's less of sort of the contemplative, oh, the economy is bad, and also the gods are leaving sort of stuff. It's more sort of like straightforward action-y plot. So I liked this issue, and have high hopes for the next ones.
Nice. I'm looking forward to reading it.
Yeah. And I think that about takes care of our comics discussion. Why don't we just dive right into our interview with Ethan Nicole?
Let's do it. We are very excited, which I say every week, but it's always true every week. We are very excited to have the co-creator of something that was probably the biggest thing on the comics internet over the last year. The co-creator of Axe Cop, Ethan Nicole, is here. Ethan, welcome to War Rocket Ajax.
Thanks for having me.
For our listeners who aren't familiar with Axe Cop, and I can't imagine there are any, the Axe Cop is a story that you draw that is written by your 6-year-old brother.
Mm-hmm.
How did that come about? Like, how did you actually get into drawing it out and putting it online? What was the sort of impetus behind it?
Oh, they're just some comics we had created together. The first four Axe Cop comics were these comics that we made while I was there for Christmas. And at the time when I made them, I just thought it was something I was doing for fun with him. And I put them online because I wanted to get into web comics. Only because the way that the industry seems to be is that if you have a new comic and no one's ever heard of it, they don't want to go into a store and buy it. And you typically don't make money on comics. And so I was like, well, I'll just put them online for free. I might get more readers that way. And to kind of test out the theory, I put Axe Cop online because I had my other real comic I wanted to work on at the time. Axe Cop I just had no idea that it was going to resonate with people so much. So
now, the other comic you're talking about, I'm assuming, is Chumblespuzz?
No, the other comic, I was done with Chumblespuzz. The comic I was working on, which I still am kind of working on whenever I can, it's called Bearmageddon. And it's... about bears taking over the world, as it sounds like it is.
Oh man, that sounds awesome!
is that with slave labor or?
There's no publisher attached. It was just my own project. It was a graphic novel I wanted to do, but I was gonna just release it as a webcomic online first, which like a lot of people are doing nowadays, you know, and just to try to build an audience around it before it hit the shelves. Because when a book hits the shelves, like you get like a month of promotion, and then people forget about your book. But if your book is online, updating constantly, then people are always going, oh, hey, we should interview that guy. Oh, hey, we should review that. Oh, hey. And so it just helps keep your project alive, you know? It's just kind of an idea. So Axe Cop was just, I was just mainly testing the functionality of how, like, you know, how do I want the comics to scroll? How do I want them to be organized? That's the thing. Axe Cop has been such a wonky site. Like, we had no idea. We put that thing up on, like, I think it was like $20 a year server or whatever, our base we were using. I mean, it was just the cheapest little site. We threw it together and we posted it, and we just, nothing could have prepared us. So it's been a crazy project.
Yeah, saying that you started it just to sort of figure out how to do webcomics, you and Malachi have had the best possible webcomic experience.
Yeah. I don't know if we could have done better.
Now, Ethan, you were drawing comics professionally for quite a few years before Axe Cop ever came along. How different was your experience doing sort of, I guess, alternative press and independent comics compared to this sort of crazy world of web comics?
It's all pretty similar. I mean, I have been drawing comics for a long time, but this has been my first year actually doing it for a living, so I can really call myself a professional now, I guess. But I don't know. The only difference is really just the medium. I mean, it's just where the page gets posted. I still draw it in the same dimensions, and the only difference is interaction. You put your page up every day, and you get to hear all other people's responses to it, and it just makes it way more interactive than, you know, sitting there and drawing like 100 pages and never hearing any feedback on them, and then finally getting them out there. And so it's a lot of fun in that way.
Does the feedback? I mean, obviously, Malachi has a very distinctive creative vision. Does the feedback? Is there any sort of like give and take as far as the feedback goes? I know you guys have the ask Axe Cop portion of the site, so that's some pretty direct interaction with the audience right there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's true. That's something we only could have done online, unless we were being published in like a daily or weekly newspaper or something. And yeah, I mean that's an obvious strong bad kind of thing, but it worked. You know, it just seemed like it would work. So I mean, I was just curious. I was like, what if I actually took questions from people and started asking Malachi and have him answer in Axe Cop voice? You know, Yeah, that worked out.
On the subject of sort of the interaction and the immediate response that you get from readers, I've been writing on the internet for a while. Matt has been writing on the internet for a while, and we actually have a occasional segment on this show where we just talk about people who hate us. But I imagine that, like, you know, saying right up front, like, you know, this is a 6-year-old doing, you know, this is a 6-year-old's comic, and then having it be as good as it is, Do you feel like do you have haters? Or do they or is that kind of tempered?
I think it's tempered because I think people know that there's a few people that are just that they're too dumb to even realize how dumb they and mean they sound or something, but most people are kind of held back by that because they know it, you know, you're criticizing a kid's work, you just kind of look stupid. but there's people that get on, I mean, they're just like, I hate kids, and I hate their ideas, and I hate ACT COP, or like, you know, it's like, if you hate kids, well, then obviously you're going to be, you're already probably a miserable person.
Do you ever get any commenters who, even though it says right at the top of the site, that this was a comic written by a 5-year-old, do you ever get any commenters who are just completely oblivious to the fact that, you know, this is a kid's work and is evaluating it like an adult wrote this?
I think that's been happening because we just made this this partnership with collegehumor.com. And so we kind of started posting new episodes just in the middle of this Bat Warthog Man story that we're doing. And so these new readers are popping on, and it's kind of in small print that it's written by a 7-year-old up there. And so people are kind of like, what the heck is this? You know, and I'm trying to imagine if I had just popped in and read one page of that story, disjointed from anything, not knowing it was written by a kid, I'd be like, what the heck? You know, he's like going into a mouse's brain, and there's unicorns and just all this crazy stuff.
I've been wondering, you know, since I first started reading Axkoff last year, that, you know, what exactly is the process like? Because in like in my head, I like to imagine that Malachi writes scripts like I do. Like he sits down at the computer, opens up Word, and you know, it's like, all right, page one, panel one. Yep, what are we gonna do this week?
Light the cigarette. Yeah,
exactly. He's got a scotch there with him.
Yeah. Yeah, people like to. I mean, one reason I just call him writer because I don't want people to get too preoccupied with how involved I am. I make sure all the ideas come from him, and I organize them basically. Like, because he doesn't tell stories in order. He'll be on one thing, and then I'll ask him questions to get more stuff, and I have to be the one who's thinking of the story as a whole the whole time, and I have to make sure that he gives me enough to make a whole story. And, you know, if he just throws a character in there, and I'll kind of go like, well, where'd he come from? You know, why is he doing that? You know, so, like, that's one reason that a lot of the stuff seems more fleshed out than what a lot of little kids would come up with is because I ask him to fill those blanks in. And it's also my job as the creator of the comic to make sure it's good. Like, if he just makes up some dumb thing where, like, a dog is walking in circles for, like, 10 pages, I'm not going to draw it. So, like, my job to make sure it's good and entertaining and worth drawing. So, like, one thing I'm working on right now is the Bad Guy Earth trade paperback. And we're going to be doing, like, a 30-page making of section in there. You're going to see a bunch of the toys that we used. And just sketches and notes and just kind of the whole process. It was a crazy process. So, because a lot of it's really just playtime. You know, it's like you play with a kid and they make the story up as they're going, and it just kind of comes out. And so I'm taking notes the whole time, and then I go back through that story that we created during playtime and figure out what's missing, and then I go back and ask him questions to fill the blanks in, and then it becomes really interesting.
So Malachi is 7 now.
Yeah, he just turned 7.
Just turned 7.
Well, happy birthday to him from us.
Yes. Happy late birthday to him. Mm-hmm. Have you noticed in the period since you started sort of putting together these stories with him to now, are his stories becoming a little more coherent? Are his ideas becoming a little less crazy, or have they remained, has it stayed kind of the same between 5 and 7? And do you anticipate a point where he's going to sort of be too grown up to do this?
Well, I'm sure that there will be a point where, obviously, I mean, it's not going to be, you know, when he's, you know, 35. It's not going to have the same effect. Yeah, I don't know. I figure, as far as like just noticing how he's developed and changed, it's definitely, I mean, you know, little kids his age, they're more grown up every time you see him. You know, every time you talk to him, they're learning something new. His vocabulary gets bigger every single day. He loves learning new words, and that's where you start seeing, like, it's more like content. Like, his content is expanding every day, so, like, that's why all of a sudden there's chemists and stuff, because he's really interested in chemistry. And brains. Like, he's really interested in getting to go into a person's brain and control them. So that's, like, been going into a lot of stuff lately.
Yeah, I've noticed there's a lot of brains
He's really
in Batguy Earth and in recent strips on the website.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's more that. It's like, I guess the coherence is growing because he's getting more aware of other stuff, but he's still crazy because he's still having fun. He's still a little boy. And so it's almost more interesting to see. And he's also becoming more aware of the fact that this is going to be a book when we get done. So, like, you know, at the beginning, he wasn't quite catching on, but now we've had a couple books get mailed to the house. Because even, like, I don't know if he quite understands it, you know, a webcomic goes out and the entire world sees that. Like, you know, anybody in the world can see that has the internet. It feels like it's just on our home computer, so I don't think he was realizing, you know, that this is a book that's on shelves and stores, and so now he's getting more excited to, like, make... Or he thinks in those terms, like, we're making a book, you know, so he gets all excited.
Does that make it like more fun for him? Because I know that you've talked about in the commentary sections of the first Axe Cop trade, which came out from Dark Horse, which is fantastic. If there's anybody who doesn't have it, it's got so much great bonus stuff in it, and it's so worth picking up. One of the things you talked about in there was that a lot of the characters come in pairs, because he sort of, you know, refers to them as you and me.
Mm-hmm.
So does that sort of make it more fun for him, knowing that there's a book and that you guys are sort of, you know, acting out something that's going to be more than just, you know, you and him on the playground?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, he knows that there's going to be a book in the future, so he's just become more aware of that, I guess, is all, whereas he wasn't before. So now he just understands now. He gets more, like, why I ask certain questions. He understands why I have to ask questions. Like, he used to kind of just get really annoyed when we'd finish playtime for the day. I'd go hide in my room, write a bunch of notes, and, like, organize everything and find plot holes, and then come back with, like, a list of questions. He'd be really annoyed by all these questions. But now he understands why I need them, and also, so he's more willing to answer him now. So that's kind of, it's actually better. We got probably twice as much material this last, I just got back from spending another month with him, because to do Bad Guy Earth, I spent a month with him to do that. So I just spent another month with him writing, and he probably produced twice as much stuff, just because now that he gets it, he just produces more, I guess.
We talked a little bit about the, like, sort of plot cohesion that you have to put in there. I mean, you're also doing the art for this. What sort of mindset do you have to put yourself in to be able to draw some of these insane creations and put them on the page? Like, Bat Warthog Man is hilarious. Like, it's hilarious just as a word, but then once you see the image of Bat Warthog Man, it's just beautiful. Like, how do you get yourself in the headspace to make visual images of this stuff?
Well, that's the easiest part for me. That kind of stuff comes the most naturally to me. I love drawing, you know, weird stuff. I've always loved it. You know, one thing I used to always do with Malachi when he was younger, and he was like 3, and I just have him draw a scribble on a piece of paper and just turn it into a creature. Or he would just explain weird stuff and I'd draw it. Even just when I used to be in a rock band when we were on tour, and just sitting in the van, I would just, like, ask a few of the guys to, like, say an animal at the same time, and they'd all say whatever came to their head. I'd combine the animals they all said into one animal. It's just, like, I love that kind of stuff. Like, I love being given the challenge of, like, drawing a visual representation of something insane. So that's one reason I feel like this project has been so perfect for me, because it's just, I'm very comfortable in doing that kind of thing. And it's a lot of fun. I mean, there are certain things he's asked me to draw where it just, I can't conceive of how that would be drawn. Like, he actually has a character. Well, actually, I don't want to give it away. It's insane. It's an upcoming story. But I still have no idea how I'm going to draw it.
Nice. I'm flipping through Bad Guy Earth right now and just looking at all the, like, the panel where there's a Tyrannosaurus Rex in sunglasses holding a car in his mouth while doing a sideways John Woo jump with his machine gun arms shooting down jet fighters.
Mm-hmm.
That's fantastic. I mean, that's just, you know, great.
Very, very Calvin and Hobbes.
Yeah, and it's this perfect sort of over-the-top representation of what kids like, because it's, you know, it's dinosaurs and it's violence. there's so much violence in it, but it's this crazy sort of you know, Chuck Jones kind of meets Itchy and Scratchy level violence.
Yeah,
where like, you know, flipping through Bad Guy Earth, I mean, you've got you know, panels where a bunch of dudes like just get burned to death and they're like skeletons on fire. Like, is it weird to sort of to be making something like that when everybody, you know, everybody can remember when they were a kid and they loved that stuff. You know, like, you know, the first thing you do, like, when you're a kid is you make, you know, gun fingers and run around pretending to kill your friends.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, there's a lot of stuff, you know, like, the major Marvel and, you know, Marvel and DC and major publishers that do kids' comics really sort of, you know, put the kibosh on a lot of violence. Mm-hmm. Like, I think when we talked to Brian Clevenger and he talked about doing the Captain America book, that was meant for kids. It was like he couldn't have him shooting Nazis, and they didn't even want any guns in it. Yeah. But you're working with like an actual kid.
Yeah, part of it is values, because I think one messed up thing about our culture is, you know, they're getting to where, you know, you say Nazis are evil, and they go, well, we probably can't really say that they're evil. I mean, they, you know, they were pretty bad, but we don't know, you know, what's evil? Who knows what evil means, you know, like, and so it becomes like, you know, who's evil, what's evil? But then they're fine with saying violence is evil. Like, no violence, violence is evil. But like, I guess the Bin Laden thing that just happened kind of, I think it's great we killed him because he was evil, and it's good that he's dead. And I have no problem with, you know, with my little brother, you know, believing that bad guys should, you know, the bad guys should be killed if they're evil, if they deserve it. And so that's, you know, that's one thing. That is a values difference probably between me and the culture. But it's not, it doesn't even go that deep with Malachi. It's like Malachi isn't even thinking like that most of the time. He's thinking mainly in toys and video games. And so, like, you know, and he doesn't draw the line. Like, he doesn't see the divide between Wile E. Coyote and Batman. So, like, he thinks they're in the same world. Batman could just as well slap an invisible circle on the ground and hope that the Joker falls into it, or like paint, you know, paint like a big scene and hope the Joker like runs into it or something. Like, to him, the Batman and Wile E. Coyote are in the same universe. So like, or Wile E. Coyote might, you know, throw a batarang at the Roadrunner. Like, he just, that stuff's all mixed into one big thing. Like, give the bad guy a present with a bomb in it, you know? And, so it, and also video games, like he plays like Kirby, you know, so he'll take something Kirby does and he'll have like a human character do it, where it's just really much weirder if a human character like sucks a bunch of people into his mouth. It becomes a lot more creepy and strange, but he doesn't see the divide in the and all that. So, that's mainly it.
It's some kind of, it's a really interesting thing to think about, like where somebody's mind is before they realize that, oh, this is separate from this, and because this is Marvel and this is a Warner Brothers cartoon, they can't sort of coexist together. Like, has he actually like tried to insert like characters, like copyrighted characters that you absolutely can't use into Axe Cop?
Yeah, all the time he's trying to pull stuff, especially from Ben 10. And so,
yeah, I know you mentioned Ben 10 in the paperback. And when I was a kid, you know, I would make like comics where I would just redraw scenes from my favorite Batman comic, but like the guys from Street Fighter would be in it.
Yeah.
So like I was actually wondering that as well.
Yeah. His initial inclination is to just use characters he likes, and I just usually say, "Oh, we got to change him. We got to make him our own because we can't use that. Cause I want to put him in the in a book, you know." So, he'll change him a little bit. Like a great example of that is, we actually did a live drawing. Like in LA, we had a signing and we had a big panel event down there, and we created a character in front of everybody. So as he was talking, I drew it, and so he said, "All right, let's create a new character." And he says, "King Kong." I go, "Well, King Kong has already been created. So can you change his name a little bit, and we'll just start changing him from there?" And he goes, "Junior Kong." And I'm like, "I think Junior Kong is either used or it's pretty close. We should change it even more. Change the Kong part." So then he says, "Junior Cobb." I'm like, "Okay. What's the Cobb? How do you spell Cobb? With one B or two Bs?" And he says, "Three." And from there, he adds like robotic fists, and he adds like a tail that shoots out jet airplanes, and pretty soon it becomes a whole different character. And that's a popular process that we go through, like where he tries to start off using someone else's character, and then he does things where, you know, like he tries to put in Wolverine and Superman, and I said, "Well, you can't." So then he creates Wolverman, which is just a combination of Wolverine and Superman.
in the grand tradition of superhero comics,
yeah.
Finding something you like and just make it a little different.
Yeah.
Take things and make them one. Speaking of taking two things and making one thing, Axcop had a crossover with The Adventures of Dr. McNinja, another really kind of fun webcomic that we both like. And we actually talked to Christopher Hastings about it a little bit when he was on the show. But what was your take on that from your end? Like the sort of bringing someone else in to this, you know, big giant comic book toy box that you've created.
Oh yeah, it was an interesting little experiment. I think that the characters they stand next to each other very well. Like they're a good combination, you know, because they're both kind of a funny combination. You know, an axe and a cop, and then a doctor and a ninja. So it's like this. They're a good team, and I'm interested to try. I think that there was a certain amount of. You know, like Chris kind of created an outline, and then I went over it with Malachi, and he kind of put his input in, and we made a story out of that. And I think it was good. Like I had fun with it, but I did feel like it wasn't quite enough Chris and wasn't quite enough Malachi. It kind of felt to me. So it melted in the middle a little bit too much. So I'd rather do another one that either went more Malachi or more Chris, because I felt like both of their strengths were a little bit weakened by the team up a little bit, just in the way that we did it. Cause we were only going to do like a one or two page comic to start, maybe three. And it was going to be just him drawing it. And then as we started working on the story, it got bigger. And then we went, "Hey, well, let's split up and I'll draw half, you draw half." And it just kind of, it evolved. So like, we've been talking about doing another one and I'd be interested to try it. And we both want to try a different, approach. Like we're probably going to try to get all of us on Skype or something, me, Malachi, and Chris, and like actually talk through the story all together. So it'd be interesting.
So that there is a plan for another crossover?
It's not a solid plan, but we've talked about it a number of times because we're both on Dark Horse now. So we might do a book together, like a one-shot kind of thing, or we might do another webcomic. I don't know. We've talked about it. The main thing we've talked about is the Halloween special, but we don't know if we'll pull it off or not. But
that'd be a Halloween special would be great.
Yeah.
That would be fantastic. Since you bring up Dark Horse, I've been wondering, since you're doing, you know, Bad Guy Earth and Dark Horse is picking up the trades, Dark Horse has reached out to a lot of webcomics. Obviously they're doing Dr. McNinja, they did the collections for Akewood and Wondermark and Basic Instructions, all of which are excellent, excellent comics. But in addition to just doing the collection, Bad Guy Earth is like an original three-issue full-color miniseries. And one of the things about doing a webcomic is that it's basically, you know, you talked about sort of being the editor for Malachi Stories, but that's, you know, that's really where it stops. Like, you know, you're the guy who decides everything. You know, right down to the you did the lettering as well, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I gotta say, like, I love the kind of blocky sound effects.
Yeah.
Those big chunky sound effects just are perfect every time they show up. But you know, going to Dark Horse, was there any sort of you know, transition into any sort of difference in doing something for them rather than just doing it for yourself for the web?
Not really, just deadlines, which I like to have. I like having deadlines because I get done stuff done faster. They're such fans of Axe Cop. You know, I was working with Shauna Gore the whole time on these, you know, the Last Trade and the Bad Guy Era series. And she loves Axe Cop so much, you know, the only feedback I get when I sent it in was, you know, that she fell off her chair laughing. And she would just do edits on grammar and punctuation and stuff. And every once in a while, I'd say, you know, there's kind of a weird, like, you know, the coloring. Some of the Dirk made some kind of interesting stylistic choices sometimes on the colors on Bad Guy Earth. And sometimes they were like, yeah, this weird outline he's got here is kind of weird. We're going to take that out, you know, some things like that. But they never made us change a story. The only time we ever did anything which I thought was a good idea, and it was a thing I was going to do originally, and I just kind of, I didn't think it would fit. But when they pray to Satan for his horns, remember that scene? Like, need Satan's horns, so they pray to him. Like, originally, like, that was just all they did. They prayed, and then the next shot they had the horns. Well, like, Johnna goes, we should see, like, them getting the horns somehow. And I go, yeah, okay. And so I squeezed in that panel of Satan actually sawing his horns off for them. And I thought that definitely made it, that really made that scene even funnier.
Yeah, I would love to see, like, a big, they've brought back Dark Horse Comics Presents, and I would just love to see, like, an Axe Cop, Hellboy, Dr. McNinja, you know, the Goon, like all that stuff going on at once. That would be incredible.
All in one comic?
All happening at one time. I don't know if you could actually fit all of that into one comic book, even if it was an $8 one.
Yeah, I don't know.
But yeah, what can you tell us about, like, you mentioned Bearmageddon, and I'm on board for that just based on the name. But can you tell us a little bit more about it?
It's, you know, I always say it's Shaun of the Dead with bears. Kind of, it's like about these slacker guys who get stuck in the middle of Bearmageddon, and the only person they find to help them is this, like, this crazy woodsman that's lived out in the forest his entire life because he got lost out there when he was a Boy Scout. And he's kind of like Davy Crockett meets Wolverine on crack. He's just this kind of crazy guy with a big beard. And the slackers are kind of these environmentalists, so it's kind of a funny combination of people that hate each other. They're stuck in the middle of Bearmageddon, so it's like a comedy horror action story. To me, it would be the funnest like movie to go see. But it's insane, and so I don't know. It's just the bears are all mutated. You know, there's bears with tentacles and bears with bat wings, and it's just a lot of fun. So I'm excited to get it done. Or at least get it posting. I'm hoping before Comic-Con and before in July to start or to launch it, or at least to set a launch date and start posting at least a couple pages a week. But I got a ton of Axe Cop stuff going these days, so it's hard to get back to it.
Now, we talked a second ago about, you know, that you've had an incredible amount of success. You know, there are plenty of people who I'm sure wish that they had their webcomic picked up for distribution by Dark Horse after a year.
It actually happened. Dark Horse was talking to me at about page 10. it was almost instantaneous. Like when Axe Cop went viral, there was only about 5 episodes online, and I had every publisher that I had ever hoped would talk to me was calling me and emailing me. So it was pretty crazy.
That's obviously, you know, you are enjoying having that success, but do you feel like that is a lot of pressure for your next project to sort of live up to what you've created, or do you feel like it's just, you know, getting you more people who are more likely to be in tune with what you like.
I really don't know what to expect because this project's so unique. XCOP, you know, people kind of put, you know, they give a lot of credit to Malachi, so it's interesting to see, like, you know, I wonder if they'll try out a project that Malachi's not attached to. So I'm kind of curious to see how they'll do with that. Because my work before XCOP, you know, I have a series called Shumblespuzz I did at SLG, which, you know, it's not for everybody. It's definitely not as broad-reaching as XCOP is anyway. But, yeah, it's a pretty funny book, and it was nominated for an Eisner for humor. But it really hasn't, the sales really haven't gone up with XCOP. You know, people haven't gone, oh, this Ethan guy did this, we should check out Shumblespuzz. Like, not many have done that. So it's kind of like, I wonder if my next project will be like I just started. You know, I'll have a large audience to check it out, I guess, if they're willing to. So I'm just curious to see if they will or not. I think it'll definitely give me a head start, but I think that not quite as much of a head start if XCOP was just my project.
Maybe if you got maybe if you get Malachi to do a cover blurb.
Yeah, there you go. this book is scary.
I do really hope that if we have anyone listening, you know, DC Comics does publish both Batman and Looney Tunes. So if we could get a Wile E. Coyote versus Batman crossover with you and Malachi out of this, then I think that would sell pretty well.
Still on the topic of XCOP's success, I remember when the comic first really did kind of go viral, and I read some interviews with you early on and some articles that talked about how donations and other contributions to the comic were going into Malachi's college fund. Is that right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's just basically a bank account that money's going into for him. People can donate on the site, you know, his cut of his money, even whenever I send it, it goes into this account.
Is he pretty close to being set for college?
No, that's the funny thing. That's like the misconception that people have about this. Like, you know, every time someone sees an XCOP comic, I don't get money. They're free. So, you know, the first couple months of XCOP, I was dirt poor. Like, I had just lost. I had two jobs, and they both laid me off in the same week. And I was totally unemployed. And I didn't really start making, you know, XCOP costed me money at first because the server, suddenly I'm having to pay for a server, like, you know, $200 or $300 a month just to handle the traffic, and I'm not making any money on the comic. And so we put up a t-shirt shop. Well, then we have to order all these t-shirts to make before we can make money back on them. So I just kind of, it's been a slow process. And the thing that people don't understand about comics is, like, it is a small little industry. So even though, you know, like comics, like if you sell 5,000 copies of a comic, that's like a huge success in comics. But in most other industries, it's not a huge success. And so it's just, XCOP has been much more of a critical success than a financial success. So people just, you know, they see all, because you hear XCOP and see XCOP a lot, you assume that all this money is pouring in. But comic book artists, until you're at the level of, you know, comics that are selling, like, you know, hundreds of thousands of copies, or at least in the tens of thousands or more, like, you're not making, like, a great living. You're making an okay living, you know, and so I can't complain. It's my first year. Like, last year was my first year ever being a working comic artist all year, but it wasn't my best income for a year. I made more money the year that I was a graphic designer for a telescope company.
Well, now that we're thoroughly depressed.
Another question about, I guess, sort of dealing with this and having, you know, a 6-7-year-old writing this stuff. You know, how has sort of the rest of your family reacted to this? Have they embraced it? Have you gotten any questions about, you know, just what are you guys doing drawing this comic about a planet made out of poop? You know, what's their reaction been?
Family's very supportive. My dad's, you know, as proud as a father could be. I think it's probably pretty surreal for him to be watching his oldest of his offspring and his youngest of his offspring coming together and making this project and doing this thing together. I think it's probably pretty fascinating for him. So he obsessively keeps up with everything. Like, you know, he's got his Google alerts going and he's always keeping track of everything that goes on with it. And stepmom Dila, she thinks it's gross. Just like most moms don't understand what their boys are like, stop that. That's gross. You know, like, ew, don't say that. You know, that's violent. You know, like, you know, guys get it, girls don't. And that's just the, you know, so she loves it and thinks it's funny, but she's always like, she waits. She doesn't read the comics. Like, she waits a really long time and finally catches up because everybody's talking about them and she doesn't know what they're talking about. But then she's getting through them and it's like, you know, 6 months ago, the poop one went up. So it's too late for her to say, like, Malachi, you shouldn't be talking about poop. It's like, it already happened way back there. So she's like, Malachi. He's like, Mom, it's just a story. then the sisters, Malachi's got two sisters that are, you know, 12 and 13, or I think they're 13 and 14 now, actually. So they're just like, you know, like, whatever. Like, even though, you know, until Justin Bieber says it's cool, they don't think it's cool.
Oh, a Bieber club cover blurb would be a big deal, too, for that next project.
Yeah, suddenly they'd love it. Yeah, and they're like, you know, comic book nerd. You know, they just, you know, they don't get it. And also, I mean, it's their little brother. They don't get, they're not at the age where the nostalgia for what being with a five-year-old boy, like, thinking like a five-year-old sets in yet. You know, they're at the... that early teen stage, which is, I never want to go back to that stage.
Well, with that, Matt, what do you say we move on to the question from the hat?
Indeed. Ethan, just to let you know, we have a segment in our interview portion where I draw a question from a top hat that I have. These questions were sent to me either via Twitter or I wrote them myself. They're not really directed at anybody in particular. It's just sort of an open-ended question for you to answer however you see fit. Funny, philosophical, however you want to go with it. So the question that I am pulling out of the hat right now is from Phil Nelson on Twitter. And he asks, why won't somebody do something about all the problems?
I don't have a good answer for that.
My favorite part of every show is that 2 second dead silence after we ask every question from the hat. I love it.
It seems like AxeCop is out there trying to solve all the problems.
Yeah, AxeCop is. He's the one doing it. Yeah, he always has a solution.
I think that that we should all try to be a little bit more like AxeCop.
Mm-hmm. He solves the problems. You can't say he does
all those
problems.
Violent murders. All right, and now we're going to go ahead and take a few questions from our listeners on Twitter. Every week I ask for questions for the person we're interviewing. So these actually are directed at you, Ethan.
All right.
Our first one comes from our good friend, Power Listener, Max to the Max, who would like to know, has AxeCop ever tried lumberjacking?
You know what? I think I asked Malachi that. I'm pretty sure AxeCop is fully capable of chopping trees down, but I don't think he does it very often.
Well, it is. If I know my AxeCop continuity, mm-hmm. And I did read up in preparation, it's a fire axe, right? It's not a tree axe.
Yeah, but I mean, there's a lot of secrets about that axe that we haven't. Some have been revealed, some haven't. There's special goggles in the axe. You've seen a certain few times, like he can see if his candy is poisonous on Halloween. He can look through little goggles in the axe. And he's never revealed it, but if he flips the axe around and points the handle at you, it's actually a shotgun.
Because it wasn't enough. He didn't have enough.
Shotgun. There's a lot. And also, you've seen there's a button he can push on his axe and a jillion blades come out and he can chop off a jillion heads at once. So, like, that actually, I think it was a jillion or a thousand, but it was a lot.
Is there ever, do you have any plans? I guess this would maybe be up to Malachi, but is the axe ever going to get a name like Thor's hammer?
I don't know if it'll get a name. I don't think he's thinking like that right now. But most of his names are either a really ridiculous word or a very literal name. You know, like psychic boss.
Like dinosaur soldier?
Dinosaur soldier.
Say dinosaur and a soldier?
Yep, or Hostamia. You know, it's like some weird, like, ethnic-sounding name. Wasso.
Our next question comes from another frequent question asker on the show. Magic Love Hose would like to know, if you could de-age any comics writer with a de-age ray and then collaborate with them, who would you choose?
Hmm. I don't know. That's a weird question for me to think about because I never would even thought of myself doing this way with Malachi. Like, I think I'm probably exhausted enough as it is. I wouldn't want to work with another kid, even if it was like Alan Moore as a child.
But if you had a de-age ray with Alan Moore, then it would be awesome because he would be like a little tiny baby, but with that beard.
Yes.
He'd still have those, like, the angry look on his face.
He'd be the angriest baby. Yeah. I mean, just a little baby with a beard and mad eyes. Oh, man, I want that to happen now.
And he would still hate any movie adaptation of his work.
Yeah, anything, yeah.
Our next question, we actually got a few questions on this subject. This one comes from Matt Child, who says, are we going to get a hyper-cynical, gritty, super-sexy Axe Cop when Malachi hits puberty?
Only time will tell. I mean, and I have to be willing to draw it, so.
Oh, man. He's gonna crack open that college fund and get Rob Liefeld as soon as he turns 13.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, when he gets to a certain age, he'll just go, I can hire any artist I want.
I was thinking more along the lines of the Axe Cop Returns.
Oh, yeah? Just, like the Frank Miller?
Yeah, just get Frank Miller.
I think Frank Miller would do it. I think you could probably get Frank Miller to do it now. Next question comes from MK2 Face, and Face is spelled with a 3. He would like to know if you have to or if you want to get Malachi's approval before turning in art, specifically regarding Bad Guy Earth. Like, does he see it before it goes out?
No. Because there's no way I would make those changes. That's too much work. He's going to sit there and go, oh, yeah, there's that page you spent, like, you know, 8 hours on. Better change all that. And most of his changes make the story make no sense. So, so yeah, it's like what's done is done. He doesn't see it till it's printed and sitting in his lap.
Chris Pierce, who is an artist that I have worked with before, who has taken my scripts that are like a six-year-old wrote them and drawn them on paper, he would like to know, he has two questions. His first question is that now that you have deadlines, which you mentioned that you do like, do you ever worry about Malachi just not being into working on the comic or not writing about it? Or not wanting to write it, I guess.
Well, that was my worry before, but it's actually... Funny thing is, me and Malachi usually work faster than Dark Horse does. So we'll have plenty of content made, and they'll still be working on getting me deadlines. So yeah, that hasn't been a problem. Like, I was a little worried about that at first when we had like 10 pages up on the internet, and they're asking me to do them a full miniseries, like a 75 page comic. I was kind of terrified of that idea, and so that was one reason that I went and spent that month with them to create the that miniseries, just to see if it was even possible to do it. So when I had been up there for a while and had been writing, and I started going, hey, yeah, we could do this. And that was when I told them, yeah, we could do it. So I've always taken that precaution, and it's always been, I'm trying not to be too presumptuous, but it always turns out that Malachi has way more material than I need. So far that hasn't been an issue.
Chris's second question is that he would like to know, who is Malachi's favorite comic book character?
I have no idea. I think, the comics he reads the most are Lulu comics, which I know lets down a lot of superhero comics readers, but Dark Horse gave us a Lulu book, and he loves that thing. And so he actually has stacks of them now, because Dark Horse just sends any Lulu books they have, they send to Malachi. So he has stacks of Lulu books. And whenever I'm up there, we read them. These are just these funny old comics. I don't know if he has a favorite character in there, but he loves Lulu comics.
All right, and our final question. Actually, we have one final question. Is from Hey, This Is Brian, who would like to know, how would X-Cop do an anti-drug PSA?
I have to ask Malachi that one. It's a good question for Ask X-Cop. I'll have to throw that one into the mix. Yeah, I don't know. What would he do? He'd say, don't take drugs or I'll chop your head off, I assume, but I don't know.
That seems to be his standard advice.
Yeah. He'd probably do something. He'd probably send little robots out to steal your drugs from you or, like, kill you if you do drugs or something. I don't know. So we'll find out. But he's always really thorough.
He's a hardliner, is that?
Yeah, you break the rules, you die.
All right, and that is all the questions we have from Twitter. Ethan, before we let you go, we've talked about X-Cop, we've talked about Bearmageddon. Is there anything else that you'd like to plug?
Not at the moment. Not really, no. It's just X-Cop takes up plenty of my time, so that works.
Well, Ethan, so thanks again for coming on. It's been a lot of fun talking to you, and we are both huge, huge fans of X-Cop, so we're really glad to have gotten a chance to talk to you on the show.
Great. Yeah, thanks a lot. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, our guest has been Ethan Nicole. You can find X-Cop, and you can click on the ads and donate to Malachi's College Fund all at axcop.com. And X-Cop Bad Guy Earth is a 3-issue miniseries from Dark Horse Comics. It's full color. It's fantastic. It has the Earth being turned evil and growing devil horns, which I have only seen once in comics before, and that was by Jack Kirby. So that's good company to be in. Those are in comic book stores now from Dark Horse Comics. Ethan, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thanks, guys.
All right, thanks again to Ethan Nicole for stopping by. Matt and I are both big fans of X-Cop. But Matt, we have not done this in a while.
We haven't, and the fact that this is sort of a mutual one made it something we had to do this week. So we now enter the portion of the show where we give what, Chris?
It sounds like this is going to be the part of the show where we give big ups to all our haters.
Bible on a beat.
We got them going down for the count. Looking at the ground. That's why we got haters. That's why we got haters. Haters everywhere we go. Haters everywhere we go. Haters everywhere we go. Where we go. Haters going down for the count.
Matt. Who's hating on us on the internet this week?
Okay, so if you looked at Comics Alliance on Friday, you will have seen Chris's Ask Chris article in which Matt Child, who asked a question actually during our interview segment, asked it, like, who Chris would choose as the Justice League of comedy.
And if I had to make a version of the Justice League out of stand-up comics.
Yes. And through a conversation between us, we sort of...
I kind of brought it up to Matt because, like you, Janai, we used to talk about stand-up a lot on the show. Matt and I are both real big stand-up comedy fans. So I, you know, while I was trying to figure out what my lineup would be and who the they would stand in for, I kind of, you know, brainstormed a little bit with Matt over the course of writing.
Yeah, and you actually sort of came to me with a pretty well set group that you wanted to make the JLA, and you kind of just brought them to me to say, would you agree with this? And I said, yeah, and then we sort of like decided who was an analog to who. But I fully agreed with the comics you picked.
Because basically, I just picked, like, you know, 8 of my favorite comics, like 8 of my favorite comedians.
And let's be honest with ourselves here, the biggest comics going right now who aren't Dane Cook or Carlos Mencia or
Jeff Dunham.
Jeff Dunham.
Or the blue collar comedy tour.
Yeah. So here's the one of the comments on this article. It was the second comment. And it is from I can't even read this person's name, so I'm not gonna say it. But the comment is,
now, I do want to point out, I quit reading comments on Comics Alliance like 3 weeks ago.
Yes.
So this is a new one to me. You've told me about it, but this is a new one to me.
Okay, here's what the guy says. He says, "Holy crap, you need to get your comedy somewhere other than the talking heads of VH1. I love the blank clip shows. The people you list were stale 4 years ago."
4 whole years?
4 whole years. I failed to see how.
I love how every big ups to all my haters segment involves one of us saying, all right, first of all.
Well, first of all, I want to say that I can't even imagine how Aziz Ansari could have been stale 4 years ago.
Yeah, are you talking about before his first stand-up special?
Yeah. If you're picking a JLA of comedy.
Yeah, it's gonna be the big guys.
It's gonna be the big guys. You're not gonna pick the new, fresh, cutting edge comics that nobody's heard of yet.
Yeah, I'm not gonna, when I went out to Charleston a couple weeks ago to see Huge, there were stand-up comics there, and there was a guy named Dusty Slate, who was really funny, and there was a guy named Viet, who was really funny. But, they're not the Justice League.
Yeah, well, it's
just, Superman and Batman?
I could even name, pretty decently known comics who are still kind of, on their way up, a Hannibal Buress. Or a Donald Glover.
But the only reason Donald Glover didn't make it to my list was because he's Spider-Man.
Exactly. But Donald Glover still has, he's still on an upward trajectory. Not to say that Aziz Ansari's, hit his peak or Maria Bamford, but, they are big comedians
with
big-selling albums. Who are established and people know who they are. If the guy who asked the question said, who would be the comedy equivalent of Jaime Reyes Blue Beetle? Okay. Maybe a brand new guy would be an appropriate answer. But this is asking for who are the biggest and the best?
It is who are your 7 favorite stand-up comics, and now write a joke about how Louis C.K. is like Superman.
Yeah, and
that was the question.
Exactly, and sub haters. There are some other commenters on this article who are talking about how we should have included Richard Pryor or George Carlin, and I want to congratulate. The commenter who goes by the name of Palmer, who said they can be in a companion piece on the JSA and comedians, which I think is perfect.
I actually had a conversation on Twitter with a reader who here's the reason that George Carlin and Richard Pryor are on there. It's because they're dead.
Yeah.
It's hard to put together a team of dead guys.
Well, when you first brought this to me and you were like, okay, Louis's on there. Eugene Merman's on there, Sharpling's on there, and so forth. My first reaction was to say, so these guys all have to be current. We're not talking about Lenny Bruce or even Bill Hicks.
We figured out on Twitter was that Bill Hicks is the Spectre. Because he has these really elaborate ironic punishments he wants to mete out, and also he's dead.
But all his elaborate ironic punishments are just being raped by the devil. But it's it should be pretty clear from the article that one of our ground rules from the beginning was that these were all going to be current people. And yet. Maybe kind of lost on. It's either they're not old enough or they're too old.
Yeah, which you know, and again, it is hilarious to think that, you know, that the if you haven't read the article, the ones that I picked, Louis C.K., Paul F. Tompkins, Maria Bamford, Eugene Merman, Aziz Ansari, who else was in there? Patton Oswalt.
Sharpling.
Tom Sharpling. Tom Sharpling was Oracle. Because yes. he's a mysterious voice who coordinates from his hidden laboratory in New York.
Zach Galifianakis.
Yeah, and Zach Galifianakis.
Yeah.
Now, admittedly, you know, Galifianakis has been around a while. Tompkins, Oswald, these are guys who've been around a while. They've had, like, multiple specials. Like, I can't imagine thinking that these guys are tired. Like, that they're not, like, these are also guys who are, like, still out there, you know, doing work and being really funny.
Well, like, Louis has been around forever. So is Paul F. Tompkins.
Yeah.
Like, Paul F. Tompkins was on Mr. Show.
Yeah.
Louis was a writer for Conan on,
on late night,
like, at the beginning of late night.
Louis C.K. wrote Pootie Tang in 2001.
Yeah, but nobody, like, you couldn't, there's no way you could argue that Louis C.K. isn't, like, on the absolute top of his game right now. He writes brand new stand-up material every year. He's got his own show on FX, and it's actually doing well compared to, like, his show on HBO.
And it's hysterically funny.
But it's, like, half funny, half, like, poignant, weirdly affecting. But that's beside the point. Like,
it's good.
Listen to WTF with Marc Maron, and every single fucking guest will talk about how they want to get to where Louis is, because he's at the top. Like, he's the guy.
And, like, it's not like you know, it's not like these are guys who stopped doing work 4 years ago. You know, these guys aren't like Gallagher. Like, the industry has not passed these guys by.
Yeah.
Like, hilarious, the Louis C.K. special, that came out last year, right?
Or was it? And, like, I went and saw him at the Chicago Theater back in, like, October, and he was doing entirely different material from Hilarious. Brand new material, and it was great. Like, nothing stale about it.
What I'm saying is that whoever left that comic doesn't know what the fuck he's talking about.
Okay.
Aziz Ansari, man, he's passed his game after doing his one special and one movie and one TV show. Yeah. He's done.
Oh,
he's over.
He's what, like, 26, 27? Done.
Yeah. Done. I guess he did two TV shows. He did Human Giant, too.
Yeah. Ugh. Okay, now that we have done more than our share of geeking out about comedy, I think...
The idea that people, you know, that somebody's like, hey, you know, write some stuff about stand-up comedy. And I'll go, okay, and then somebody go, no, this is wrong. Like, there it is, that's the internet.
Well,
there you go.
I would like to, like, one... I wonder who the brand new fresh comics this guy was thinking of were.
Who he doesn't mention.
Who he doesn't
name. He makes
no
suggestions.
He doesn't name. And another commenter points out that he doesn't name anybody. And two, I'm sort of curious how he thought an article full of, like, naming comedians that nobody had really heard of would go over.
I live in South Carolina. How am I supposed to know about guys who don't have albums and specials?
I live in Chicago, and half the comedians who perform at, like, sort of the main downtown comedy club are, like, frankly, people who are past their prime. Like, it's like, I don't even know where to go see, like, the brand new, fresh, up-and-coming comics, except for, like, Pitchfork Fest, which had a comedy thing last year, weirdly enough. But, anyway,
Yeah,
before we talk about this all night.
Too late.
Call this show done with and say that was War Rocket Ajax number 67.
So big ups to you, Mr. Guy. We will be back next week with another exciting show. We actually have some scheduled guests coming up. Next week, our plan is to sit down with Mr. Jonathan Hickman, who is a great guy. And why am I even explaining it? You know who he is. He writes Fantastic Four or Future Foundation now. We'll be talking to him about that and hopefully about his new project, Red Wing, I guess it's called. Yeah, the Red Wing. That should be a lot of fun. He's a great guy. He's a fellow South Carolinian, so obviously we will be discussing barbecue. And then we also have a special guest book for the week after as well, but I will tell you all about that in episode 68. This has been War Rocket Ajax. Thank you for listening. Please feel free to leave us a review on iTunes to help people find the show. And you can find us online in various places. Matt, where can they find you?
Before I get into that, let me just say that I had every intention of having a Hundo Club member on as third chair this week. Through scheduling stuff, weren't able to make that happen, but we will continue to be having Hundo Club people on the show. If you are a member, we will get to you. Hold tight. We're going through sort of in the order that we got the donations, so stay strong, hold tight. You will be on the show if you are in the Hundo Club.
And your books are going out soon.
Yes, I'm actually
getting Chad to sign the copies of Resurrection tomorrow so that I can send them out. So.
I sent out a couple batches of Hate You Forever books this week. I have some more coming in the mail to send out possibly next week. So if you haven't got your book in the mail, it is on the way. Anyway, you can find me on the internet on Twitter. My name on Twitter is HighMindedMW. You can also follow my satirical Fake E Etiquette feed on Twitter. It's at Fake E Etiquette. And I also would ask you to please go check out the Content Farm. It's at thecontentfarm.net. I edit that, and there's some funny stuff on there. Also, let me ask you to follow Huge, the rapper who does our theme song and the former co-host of this show. He's on Twitter at Huge Warrock. Follow our former poster artist, Max Huffman, on Twitter at Max Huffman. And another member of the Ajax crew, Rusty Shackles. He's at Rusty_Shackles. Chris, where can people find you on the internet?
People can find me on the internet everywhere. Just open up a browser and look. Specifically, though, you're going to want to look at the-isb.com, which is my personal homepage where I occasionally write funny bits of things and usually have links to things that I write elsewhere for up-to-the-minute content of pictures I see and quotes I see on Wikipedia that make me laugh. You can check out 20%cooler.tumblr.com. That's all spelled out. And for up-to-the-second news and updates, you can check out me on Twitter at twitter.com/THEISB. Also, Awesome Hospital is back. We are doing our story arc called Forever that is we figured out how to end it. It's going to be great. We did a special free comic book day thing to get people all caught up. So please check out awesomehospital.com. And you can also find me every single day at comicsalliance.com, the number one comic book website in the America, where we have news, reviews, and opinions. And that brings episode 67 to a close. We will be back next week with another great show. Good night, everybody. Ajax out.
Yeah! Flash.